Well, hey, this is your old friend Bill. Whenever I find myself in Davis, I'm busy putting the fun in fundraising. But when I'm not, I always listen to KDVS 90.3 FM. And you should too. Go Aggies!
This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Yeah, that's right. I am your host, Douglas Everett, and this is Radio Parallax, part of KDVS's Public Affairs Broadcasting, coming to you this Thursday, as we do every Thursday at 5 o'clock. I think for the foreseeable future, we ought to tack on a new theme for America, in addition to our own theme song that opens the hour. It's very topical. I think we should air it every week. Let's cue that up, please, Mr. McMillan.
Now this means war! Freedom is going to war! Each native son will grab a gun and run away to war!
At last we're going to war!
At last we're going to war!
At last the country's going to war!
Yes, some folks are determined that we are going to war. We'd like to point out to you, as we do every week, that the search for Osama bin Laden now numbers 429 days and counting, the still unsuccessful search for Osama bin Laden. Yet somehow, Iraq, which did not attack us on September 11th, 2001, has been elected our avowed enemy, and some folks are beating the drums for war. War is good for the economy, some say. I've heard that my whole life. But I've never understood how that can be, how the business of building things that blow up instead of helping people's lives can ever benefit an economy in the long run, or for that matter, in the medium run, or even the extreme short run. How can it? I'll grant you, it's very good business indeed for certain sectors of the economy. Those sectors would be the what we call the military-industrial complex, a term that dates back to GOP President Dwight Eisenhower, a military man, a man who was in the know about such things, who warned us when he left office in 1960 that the nation should beware of an establishment whose vested interests were in going to war and building armaments. In some future show, we're going to dig out Ike's speech on this matter and excerpt it for you. I'd like to inject a little story off of MSNBC at the moment, pointing out to the public, which may be shocked to learn, that President Bush will spend $7.4 billion on R&D for missile defenses next year, twice the sum that Ronald Reagan spent on Star Wars in his final year in office, for a system that remains sketchily defined and technologically dubious against unlikely threat that lies years, if not decades, off. Meanwhile, of course, to defend against weapons of mass destruction that we all fear might blow up on American streets next week, the administration is spending, well, not quite zip, but far, far less than would be needed for minimally serious effort on this technology. And some happier news from the aerospace front, the Galileo spacecraft took a final bow in whipping past Jupiter's moon Amalthea a couple weeks back. Galileo has extended its lifespan something like five times past what anybody expected, has been a real workhorse for gaining scientific knowledge in the solar system, and deserves a round of applause. Yay! And about the same time, another spacecraft we have, which has a date with a comet in 2004, it's going to actually sample the comet using aerogels and bring back little specks for analysis to the Earth, took a snapshot of the asteroid named after Anne Frank, the Anne Frank asteroid, has been added to our photo album collection, which is slowly getting bigger, of these interesting bodies. And in other space-related news, this Monday night, the 18th, prognosticators say that the Earth is due for another meteor storm, as the Leonid meteor shower, which comes every year, may erupt into rates of meteors tens and perhaps hundreds of times higher than a normal meteor shower. We may get a meteor storm such as we witnessed last year, where rates went from the normal of 60 an hour to over 1,000 an hour. According to prognosticators which have proven themselves, we may get another such show. So if you can possibly get out on Monday night, 2:30 in the morning, get away from city lights, get up in the country perhaps somewhere, and get some clear sky viewing of what may take place, I don't think you'll be disappointed. There was a meteor storm last year that I am still grinning over. It was quite a spectacular show. A good time was had by all. We had an 8-car caravan that went out to the foothills to take a look at this. And if you possibly can, I would suggest that you do the same. This is very weather dependent, and we don't know what the weather will be like Monday night. But even unless it's just absolutely pouring rain, you probably should still take a chance, because clouds tend to break up. And with any luck at all, you'll get one whale of a show. In a sad story from last week, actor and raconteur and character Richard Harris passed away. 60 Minutes did a little spot on him last Sunday, which maybe some of you caught. A very interesting guy. I was sorry to hear that he was gone. What came to mind when I heard this was the fact that, you know, when Johnny Carson was going off the air, and that's been 10 years now, if you can believe it, I guess 11, Carson had all the creme de la creme of Hollywood anxious to come onto his show. He had some say as to which guests he was going to select for the honored positions of the last people ever to appear on The Tonight Show under Johnny Carson. And I was surprised that he chose Richard Harris on his next to the last show. With all the people in Hollywood he could have chosen, I thought that was a very interesting choice. So I dug out the tape I made of that show and took a look at it, and I realized why it was Carson wanted to use Richard Harris. And I think that we can't do better on this show than to play a clip for you of Harris's appearance on that show.
There's always a story I wanted to tell on Johnny Carson's show, and I never got around to telling it, because we always have so much, okay? This is true. I swear to God, it's a true story. I was then in this company, and I was cast as the doctor in Macbeth. And there was a leading actor in the company who was very British, very English, who had a kind of an attitude towards the Irish. Mm. He used to call us Paddies and Micks. Ah. And he thought that I shouldn't have this tiny little part as the doctor. I should be carrying a spear.
Right.
And he was so rude to me through the whole rehearsals, so rude you can't believe. Now, in the middle of the play, this English actor's playing Macbeth, the king. And at the center part of the play, the queen dies. He doesn't know she's dead. And I played the doctor. And I have to make my one appearance, and he stands as the king and says, "How goes the queen?" In his posh English accent. And I have to say, you must remember this now, I have to say, "The queen, my lord, is dead." To which he now, that's his cue for the most important soliloquy in the entire play, which is, he responds and he says, "She should have died hereafter. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time." And he's been waiting to say this famous speech. And I think I'll get him back, all right. I'll fix him in the opening night. So suddenly it comes. And he comes out and he stands with his crown, his beard, and he turns to me and I enter. He says, "How goes the queen?" And I say, "Ah, she's fine."
"She's fine. She'll be up in about 10 minutes.
She's fine. She'll be up in about 10 minutes. She's perfect." And he stood there. What could he do?
Clearly, Johnny Carson was delighted at Richard Harris's storytelling. It's a funny little story. Earlier in that same segment, he came on and talked about how the British papers, when he first was a success at the Cannes Film Festival, said, "British actor wins award at Cannes." And then a week later, when he was in a barroom brawl, which he described as a bit of a dust-up, the British papers heralded, "Irish actor arrested in brawl." He was a world-class carouser, and he admitted on 60 Minutes that apparently in his younger days, when he and Peter O'Toole would go out, that at one point their body weight appeared to have been about 70% gin and tonic. Another Harris among the field of actors in the world was lost to us when Jonathan Harris also passed away on November 7th. You may remember Harris as the villainous Dr. Smith on the old Lost in Space primetime television show. For my money, there's probably no more cheesy actor in the history of the art than that of Jonathan Harris. What I think is curious in his obituary is that when they started the show, he was given a minor role as this villainous actor, But he started doing these improvs that they thought worked. And before you know it, Jonathan Harris became, along with the robot and the boy Billy Mummy, pretty much the main actor in the series. So it was a planned thing on his part. He said if he played a deep-dyed, snarling villain, they'd have killed him off in 5 episodes, and he'd been unemployed again. So he snuck things in and became indispensable and had a 3-year run. And, you know, you just have to admire him for that. All right, we're going to go out a bit early on segment number 1 here because we have a second and third segments that run a bit long. First of all, with Dr. Whitney Lehman, factory farms and how that influences the production of meat. In the United States of America, if you eat meat, you should stay tuned to the next segment. And we'll be wrapping up in segment 3 with a very interesting look back in history with local historian Roger S. Peterson, who will take a look back with us at the history, the real history, of Wyatt Earp, an American legend. We might want to mention at this time that in next week's show, we expect to have on Bill Clinton, who we're optimistic will come on and say a few words in the wake of his appearance here at Mondavi Center, as well as an interview between Jim DiEugenio, historian, and Bill Turner, a man who went up against J. Edgar Hoover while an active member of the FBI and actually won. I'm Douglas Everett, and you are listening to Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3. Let's take a short break.